It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It's 6 minutes past nine. It's Tuesday, the 5th of March, 2024. How are you all keeping? I do hope you are very well indeed. And you're in line for another really busy 9 till noon show. Coming up in the first hour, we're going to have one of our, if not our final debate on the upcoming referenda. You're being asked to go out and vote on Friday. Yes, yes, no, no. Some yes, no's, no yeses. Well, maybe you haven't made up your mind, and we'll have two guests who might be able to make up your mind for you. We want you involved in that conversation and starting your own as well. 086 60 25,000, the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Emails to comments at highlandradio.com. If you want to watch that debate and the rest of the day's proceedings, if you're at home, you can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. We're across your mobile devices on that app and on Facebook too, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, where you can see the majority of our guests. Just an update off the back of a conversation we had yesterday. There were concerns over the future of the Fáin Health Centre, the public health nurse. There were concerns they were being moved to Buncrana, that this would be the final nail in the coffin of the centre in Fáin. Well, it would appear those concerns, those fears have been allayed. Now, whether it was ever going to happen or whether because of the public discourse, the mind was changed, who is to say? But be that as it may, here is the HSC's statement this morning. It was released to us last evening. The HSC would like to advise that there are no plans to move the public health nurse from Fáin Health Centre, and that public health nurse services continue to be provided in the Fáin Health Centre. They go on to say there are no plans at present to close any other health centre. So not just the Fáin Centre, no plans, according to the HSC, to plan any other health centres. And therein lies the importance of getting out in front of a story. And as well as that, you know, people coming together or starting campaigns or making noise, it really, really does help. That's what we're here for, too, to assist in that. So yesterday, concerned that, you know, this was the end of the Fáin Health Centre. This morning, confirmation that the nurse is to stay there. The centre isn't to close, and there are no other centres scheduled to close by the HSC. So good news to start the programme this morning. So hopefully that allays some concerns. I'm sure, you know, those that don't necessarily speak out or don't feel they had a voice would have been concerned about losing that type of service close to them. So it's good to be able to reassure you this morning, if you were concerned, that according to the HSC, and we'll keep on our eye on it, that the nurse is not moving and the health centre is not closing. Okay, the trouble at RTE rumbles on. We'll take to the Irish Times here. The government has been dealt a severe blow in its efforts to finally get ahead of the RTE crisis after former chair Sunni Rahla claimed her enforced dismissal was a calculated move by Minister for Media Catherine Martin to traduce her reputation. Traduce, for those who may not be aware, kind of means to besmirch or to be critical of or to lie about. That's what traduce means. Hours before coalition leaders met last night to appoint her successor, Ms. Ní Rathaoirí issued an uncompromising statement dismissing Ms. Martin's defence of the live RTE primetime interview that prompted the chair's abrupt departure almost a fortnight ago. She accused the minister of actively taking a hands-off approach on the broadcaster and apparently contradicted some of Ms. Martin's public claims about the frequency of their contacts. The party leaders later approved Ms. Martin's suggestion to appoint former KPMG managing partner Terence O'Rourke to the new chairman to be the new chairman of the RTE board, subject to cabinet approval today. In remarks that immediately removed pressure on the minister, Ms. Ní Rathaoirí challenged several of her assertions about the new row over RTE's severance pay deal last autumn for former chief financial officer Richard Collins. Now, the new guy coming in here, and it is a guy, Terence O'Rourke, what a way to take over. The person that really is effectively suggesting he should have that job, Ms. Martin, she's walking on shaky ground at the moment. So, in other words, if she eventually has to go and he's her appointment, how does that sort of set him up for the future and actual proper change at RTE? The Irish Independent, all papers are carrying that story as their lead, and then on pages 2, 3, and 4. EU leaders are preparing for Donald Trump potentially returning to the White House. A senior official has revealed that leaders of member states are already considering the impact a second presidential term for Mr. Trump would have on the EU. The official said the political leaders are mentally preparing for the possibility of Mr. Trump defeating current US President Joe Biden in November's election. This includes looking at their defense capacity and energy sources, as many expect Mr. Trump will not be as strong an ally with the EU. They're also expected to factor a Trump presidency into the decision-making process when selecting a successor to outgoing European Council President Charles Michel. And you can see why. It's likely. I'd say he's the favourite. He's still the favourite. And he won his court case yesterday, as was expected, as we heard from Seamus Gunn as well. He believed that to be the case. The Electoral Commission has said they needed more than 4 weeks to tell the public about Friday's referendums and apologised that households have not received information booklets. But the Taoiseach has hit back saying they had enough time. I didn't receive a booklet anyway. With just 3 days to go before the polling stations open, Chair of the Electoral Commission, Judge Mary Baker, said she's very sorry some people did not receive booklets by the week of the vote. The family and care referendums are taking place on Friday as the government seeks to amend the constitution to remove the reference to a mother's care in the home and include a definition of families based on other durable relationships outside of marriage. Senator Lynn Boylan, campaign director for Sinn Féin, who were advocating for a yes, yes vote, said the government's handling of the referendum is an omni shambles, and it should have been held in June. I mean, it's a lot to ask people to come out and vote on something that they don't fully understand, and for the people that are asking them to come out and vote not to actually have the information in their hands to help inform that decision. It's kind of inexcusable, I think. On to the Irish Daily Star this morning. President Michael D. Higgins is to remain in hospital for several more days after experiencing a mild transient weakness. However, tests indicated no serious or long-term concerns for the president's health, and he'll return home on Thursday. Mr. Higgins, who is 82, was admitted to St. James Hospital last week after feeling unwell in Aras Anuchtaron. A statement said that Mr. Higgins was remaining in hospital for the weekend so doctors could monitor his blood pressure. So it sounds to me a little bit like maybe he was suffering from low blood pressure. Not that I'm a doctor, but that's what it sounds like. In today's Sun, a man is charged with dangerous driving, causing the death of a gran in an e-scooter crash. Mary Burney, in her 80s, was seriously injured in the smash in Dublin city centre on June 20th, 2023. She died some days later at the Mater Hospital. Aaron Gumbel, who is 28, was arrested yesterday morning and appeared before Judge Monica Leach at Dublin District Court. Grumble of Drumalee Park, North Circular Road, Dublin, is accused of stealing an e-scooter at the Mater Hospital and dangerous driving, causing the death of Dubliner Mary. That's one of the first cases I can remember of an e-scooter being involved in dangerous driving charges. There was very sad news for many out there, not least our colleagues down at Ocean FM. And that is after the passing of Joe Shannon, who was a celebrity chef. You'd have seen him on various TV shows, and he also had a show on Ocean FM as well. Comedian Pat Short last night led the tributes to TV chef Joe Shannon, who passed away aged just 59. The inspirational cook who had bowel cancer has been remembered as one of a kind gent. A regular on Ireland AM, he died surrounded by his family at North West Hospice in his native county Sligo yesterday. Joe, a chef at Sligo's Radisson Blue Hotel, was well known for his Virgin Media slots and hosted a show on Ocean FM with Georgie Gorman. Pat called dad of three Joe a beautiful man, adding he was so good to us on our tour and a gent to work with on TV. And Ocean FM said, if laughter and good humour was sports, he'd be an Olympic champion several times over. So our condolences to Joe's friends and family and his colleagues at Ocean FM as well. Very sad news to learn that yesterday morning. May he rest in peace. We're joined in studio by AIM2 leader and candidate for the European elections in the Midlands Northwest, Padraig Tobin. Good morning to you. How are you getting on?
I'm great. Thanks a million for the opportunity to be here with
you
today.
It's good to have you on. Also, Deputy Barry Cowan, candidate for Europe in the Midlands Northwest. Good morning to you, Barry. How are you keeping?
Good, thanks. Good morning to you both and your listeners.
I'll tell you, we could do an awful lot with you two guys today between the referenda and the elections. Maybe we'll get through quite a bit of that. Padraig, a meeting last night hosted by AIM2, how did it go?
Yeah, it was a great meeting. We were delighted with it. Pretty much a full house, even though we were in the same night as a number of other big meetings in Donegal as well. And we understand, obviously, the mic issue is an incredibly important issue. And many people were that too. But our meeting was very lively, full of energy, and, you know, there's an anger out there at what's happening in terms of Donegal, what's happening in terms of the delivery of public services. And people, you know, they want a better solution to the one that's happening at the moment. I think that the issues that came up in the debate last night mostly were accountability, that we have a government where there seems to be no accountability whatsoever. If you look at the health service, for example, we know that 3,150 people died as a result of an accident in the health service in the last 5 years, and nobody has been ever held to account in relation to that. 1.5 billion euros has been spent in terms of compensation for those accidents. Again, massive costs in the state. We know, for example, that there's about 1,100 people dead by the time an ambulance arrives to them at the moment, and that's getting worse every year as a result of the problems in the health service. Nobody been held to account. We spoke about the National Children's Hospital, the 2.25 billion price tag that exists there at the moment. And, you know, Leo Varadkar said that short of an asteroid hitting the National Children's Hospital, it will be built by 2020 for 700 million euros. And yet the world just moves on. Everybody forgets about it, but the money comes out of your pocket. We even spoke about the fact that there's 118 electric buses sitting in a yard in Dublin for the last year and a half because nobody bothered to put in the proper application for the electric chargers in relation to those buses. 50,000 euros being spent currently on ventilation systems that were bought during COVID that never worked. And the problem is in this country that the delivery of infrastructure, the delivery of public services are getting slower and more expensive in a large part because nobody's been held to account, and accountability is a big issue.
I mean, that's quite a list, Deputy Cowan. We can't go through one item at a time, but do you accept of anything of what Deputy Tobin is saying there?
I know Adder is consistent in his musings on these issues, and more luck to him and fair play to him, and he can, you know, put himself before the electorate and list out what his priorities are and how he or his party will reflect on those and prepare priorities that address these issues. From my perspective, you know, my candidacy with the European Parliament will be centred on three priorities around the issue of the transition to sustainability in food and farming and agriculture, and also in relation to the transition sustainability on energy, and upholding and retaining our tax regime and its importance and significance in our country, especially considering that everything is predicated on our tax receipts and all our public services and delivery of them is associated with that.
Just in relation to your selection, were you surprised that the party's opted to run three candidates, and sort of puts into question what the selection convention was for at all?
Look, the selection convention in the first instance asked the members in their opinion based on the process that we went through for a couple of weeks, who they felt was best placed and suited to win a seat, and they selected me in that sense. The party then reflected on that, looked at the vast area of the constituency, looked at the possibility of running a candidate in each of the provinces, Leinster, where I'm predominantly based in the Midlands, Connacht and Ulster, to maximise our vote, to encourage transfers and increase the potential and possibility of us winning a seat and maybe being competitive for a second seat. So we seek to maximise our vote based on the priorities that I've outlined. Mm. I lead out the team on that basis and hope to win support and recognise the fact that Europe matters, detail matters, and it's imperative that we put a pro-Europe party of our type in place to make a mark for the region with a view to a return for the region, which we don't believe is there presently. We're a member of a group that has scale and size, and we can build alliances and be in a position to win support for the region. And you've seen that in relation to net nature restoration.
Just before, I was going to ask you just
and,
before
and where that was originally.
Just before
it's
I bring
a much different animal now than it was then because of the manner in which we negotiated.
Are you in favour of the nature restoration law?
I'm in favour of the way in which it's in place now. Originally, I felt it was imperialism at its best and European imperialism. It didn't recognise the difference between peaty soils and our Nordic countries.
What do you say to
countries?
What
but the bottom line?
Yeah, what do you say to Donegal farmers, though? What do you say to Donegal farmers?
No, really, our opponents, of course, would seek to make hay and give the impression that this is a huge blow to farmers. You know, the bottom line is our obligations will be met predominantly by the state. Anyone else that enters into an initiative or a scheme will do so voluntarily. Anybody who doesn't will not have their single farm payment impacted upon. This will be separate and distinct from the CAP program. It will be funded from the Climate and Biodiversity Fund, which was announced by the government in the last budget, where the funds are taken from our receipts within the corporate tax take and allied to funding from Europe to help in assist.
Okay, so one quick question in relation to that. We heard concerns. We heard concerns that this would lead to large swathes of land in Donegal being repurposed, re-wetted. I think it's even in the document somewhere that we could graze wild buffalo here in Donegal. You're saying there'll be no compulsion, no arm twisting.
There is no compulsion, and I raised the matter specifically in the Dáil last Thursday with a view to the ministers with responsibility in this area who acted in Ireland's interest, that being the Minister for Agriculture, and Malcolm Noonan, the junior minister in his department, where they stated categorically on the record for everybody to see and believe that there's no compulsion on any farm having to enter into any such scheme. And any farm that does not enter any such scheme will not have their single farm payment impacted.
Okay.
And that's a misnomer, and that's something that's been a charge that's been thrown out there to frighten and to worry farmers. And I'm saying under no circumstances is that the case. And I'm saying the funding comes from the Climate and Biodiversity Fund, which was announced in the budget, in addition to European funding, and separate and distinct from the CAP programme.
Okay, Padraig Tobin, you wanted to come in there?
Yeah, just like, you know, I thought it was interesting how Barry skirted over the details of the accountability chasm, and that's understandable, I suppose, from his perspective. But, you know, look at the farming at the moment. So right now, according to Chagask, a third of farmers are making a loss, okay? They're going into poverty. A third of farmers are only making a living because someone's working off the farm currently. Two-thirds of farms are not actually individually viable anymore whatsoever. The average wage of 60% of farmers is less than 20,000 euros. And the numbers of people on the farm are leaving on an annual basis at the moment. And the big problem in this is because there's a supply chain in farming where you have farmers, factories and supermarkets, and all the profit is landing on the factories and the supermarkets table, and none of the profit's landing on farmers. And Barry Cowan and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have refused to actually prevent that exploitative competition situation arise over the last number of years. And as a result, farmers are on their knees. And of course, farmers are obviously therefore worried in relation to any other new potential threats that can come down their way. Because, like, I spoke to Charlie McConnell Logan this, and I said to him, it's unreasonable to expect farmers to work 60 hours a week for a price below the cost of production.
What do you propose?
Well, I aim to have brought about a bill called the Equitable Beef Price Bill, which will put a floor under the price of beef at the cost of production for a 3-year period until the competition authority forces.
But your beef has never been going. The price of beef at the moment, farmers are making a fortune
at the moment. But it is phenomenally sickening, as you well know. And what we want to do is put a floor under all farm produce, and until that competition.
And who would pick up the price for that? Is it the consumer will end up
paying
for that?
No, no. Look, right now, for example, the factories and the supermarkets are making hundreds of millions of euros. Many of them are tax resident in the likes of Luxembourg. They're making incredible profits, and we could easily rebalance the distribution of profit between that supply chain in a far fairer place. And
was there not someone appointed to do that, though?
The government have brought about a toothless new quangle, which will, in many ways, look at this issue. Yeah. But it won't be able to actually force these companies to provide a lot of the information.
It might embarrass them too, though.
I don't think it has the power to do it, and I think most farming organisations don't also believe that it has the power to do it as well. But, you know, the government are reticent to actually get involved, like other countries do. Other countries have competition authorities which force fair play between these sectors. In economic terms, it's an oligopoly. These factories and supermarkets have enormous power over the distribution, over the price, over all aspects of farming. And farmers are basically left swing. And as a result, they see this new nature restoration law coming down the road. They're listening to ministers like Patrick O'Donovan, who has gone on the record and said that in actual fact, this will have a serious effect in relation to what people can do with land. Even the government, in terms of planning for flood defences, etc., will be hampered, they say, in terms of this new nature restoration law. And this is the government minister that's contradicting what Barry Cowan is saying here today. The difficulty is, and this is often the case, that we have a new European law which sets mandatory targets. Yes, Barry is saying there's nothing in Irish law as of yet which will force farmers in a certain way, but we have to achieve those targets, and it remains to be seen how we can achieve those targets without actually forcing farmers in a certain different direction.
Well, if it remains to be seen, then should people like yourself be scaremongering then? Because, you know, like, and we're going to get on to the debate about the referendum at the moment, and a lot of the conversation is not really about the matters in hand and what we know. It's what could happen, what potentially could happen. You know, it's fear porn almost. Well, do you know what I mean? In everything we talk about now, we don't talk about the substantive facts. We talk about the potential ramifications.
Okay,
I just don't think it's a really helpful way of debating whichever side you're on.
There's two ways of looking at this. First of all, look at the track record of the government, first of all, and analyse what steps that they have taken and how does that leave farming at the moment. It's only by judging an organisation's actions over the last 5 years can you actually project what's likely to happen over the next 5 years. And, you know, the other fact in this is that the government are leaving this, and the referendum, by the way, strategically without detail, because it's easier to bring in something that's nebulous without the detail. The detail has to be put in when the law or the constitution has changed, and that's the difficulty.
I want to give Mr. Cowan, Deputy Cowan, an opportunity to come back if he wishes, and then we'll take a break and we'll talk about the referendum. Barry?
No, look, the bottom line is there was a fear and a concern on the part of many landowners, many farmers throughout the country when the EU Commission itself put forward these proposals. And as I said, I disagreed vastly with it myself at that time. But there has been much negotiation and amendment ever since. And what was passed, as I said last week, was a far different animal than what was proposed initially. The fears and the concerns have been addressed. And I'm saying categorically, irrespective of what sort of way Patter wants to paint a picture that is not factual, that is not based on fact, that is not based on the law that has been passed, there is no threat to anybody who doesn't participate. Mm-hmm. There is every prospect, and Chagas have confirmed this, that the state can meet its demands from within the lands of Quilter, from within the lands of Bordermore, where much of it is ongoing presently in relation to rewetting programmes.
So a question there for you, Barry. What happens?
Separate and distinct. I can't make it any clearer.
What happens if you're a farmer?
But the bottom of what I
can
will
I ask
say,
a question, Barry, just for a second.
What I will say is
just one question
in relation to whatever scheme is agreed by government after having had consultation with the sector and stakeholders over the next 2 years, that it has to move away from the cost replacement model to a reward system that benefits and accrues to those who invest in such a way that accrues a benefit for society beyond that.
Okay, Barry, you've made that point.
That is the sort of change that I would like to see, and that is the sort of change that I would fight for within this region in relation to my role, if elected by the people, to represent them in the European Parliament. So move away from cost
compensation to reward and investment. Deputy Tobin, please.
Yeah, so what happens, Barry, if you are beside a bog that's being re-wetted and the re-wetting of the bog over a number of years increases the water table, and that increase in the water table changes significantly?
I'll tell you what happens.
Barry, you're talking to Radio Dan's, you know, just give us a second.
And I respond to you. You're after
And he hasn't finished his question, Barry, please, if you don't mind. Thank you.
And as a result, the water table increases significantly and has a significant impact on the farmers living beside that area. Where's the funds for that?
That possibility, of course, has to be considered and is being considered presently, if you don't know about it, Patter, in relation to a rewetting program that has been underway and being carried out by Bord na Móna in many bogs throughout the country, especially in my own region of the Midlands. And it's up to, there's negotiations can take place prior to its commencement, consultation, agreement in relation to an independent assessment of the adjoining lands prior to the work being carried out, an independent assessment after the work is carried out, and a claim made as a result if it has been proven to have had an impact. So, you can talk to Bord na Móna, you can talk to IFA in this region, and ask them of their experience in relation to that process, how it's working, how it's been effective, and what help and assistance it is to those that
I don't think we're going to settle that today. And in fairness, you can go within parties to listen to arguments about this. We'll come back with more from our guests after these. And we're in the company of Deputies Patter Tobin of the AIM2 party and Deputy Barry Cowan, who is, of course, of Fianna Fáil, both candidates in Midlands North West as well. Deputy Cowan, in conversations, people are coming to me and saying, well, what's these referendums about? Some of them haven't received booklets, some of them haven't received voting cards. And then you have the words of people, that are well-respected, like Senator McDougall saying, if in doubt, vote no. And that's what I'm hearing. People aren't understanding exactly what's in the offing here, and they're either seemingly from, and it's only purely anecdotal, they're either not going to vote or they're going to vote no because they don't really feel they have a proper grasp of what changes might be made.
Okay, fair enough. And it's our duty as public representatives when trying to encourage people to vote in a certain direction that we try and simplify the asks. We try and make it easier to understand and allow people to make their own decision, as is their right, their duty. Our constitution, as you know, should reflect who we are and our values. And it's three generations since this section was written, 90 years. We've progressed economically and socially and predominantly for the good. We have an open economy with much more equality and diversity than we had then. This section, I believe, is sexist and antiquated. And there are two amendments being proposed, one being the family amendment, second being the care amendment. Family amendment seeks to change the constitution so that it talks about not only a family based on marriage, but also on the family based on other lasting relationships that exist in Ireland today and that are
You called it a lasting relationship, the phraseology is a durable relationship.
A lot of the problem is that you get into conflict and disagreement about the words. The words durable is, another way of describing a loving, committed relationship that is committed to last in so far as it can.
Does it have to be an intimate relationship?
Expectation that it will.
Does it have to be intimate?
It can be all types of relationships. But I mean, you can have a married couple, of course, is an intimate relationship. Other couples that cohabitate, live together based on love and commitment, of course, is intimate too in many ways. So that's the first question. The second one is in relation to the care amendment.
Well, can we just focus on that because
if you talk about the two,
this is where it starts getting confusing, Deputy. And I don't mean that to be in any way ignorant, but if we I just want to focus on the first one first, then we can go to the second one second, because when Patter tries to respond to you, the listener might not be sure if he's responding to the first or the second. So respectfully, if you don't mind, Patter Tobin, did you want to come in on the commentary there from Deputy Cowan?
So there's been a big fall in support for the referendums in recent polls. And that's, I think, what's happening is people are realising that especially on the family amendment, that it's nebulous, it's fuzzy, it's definition-free. Nobody really knows what it means. I asked Thomas Byrne, for example, can you be in a marriage with one person and be in a durable relationship with another person at the same time? He said yes, incredibly. And, that's a recipe for confusion in terms of social welfare, in terms of wills and succession, in terms of tax, immigration, family law. It's incredible that... you know,
is it not important though, Pater, that, you know, we don't have the government dictating everything to us? You know what I mean? That the Oireachtas, that the courts do will have an opportunity to clarify some of the concerns that you might have, and that really what we're putting in is language that is more inclusive of a changing Ireland. Like, is this about recognising single parent families? That being seen as an attack on marriage? Is it not better in a changing world to have more inclusive language and then leave it to the Oireachtas and the courts, as we often do, to iron out the crinkles that you talk of?
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen an update in the language to reflect, you know, different families that exist at the moment. The problem is that because this is so nebulous, nobody actually knows what it means. And that's the key issue. You mentioned that families will be able to go to the courts to find out what it means. But many families don't have 100 grand to go to the court and spend 5 years waiting for a court case to be decided by a judge. So what do you do when you're in a relationship for 6 months? When do you know that's a durable relationship at that stage to change your taxes?
Yes, but at the moment, we know what cohabitation is. It's very clearly
it's
laid
set
out
clearly.
There.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah, and that's so. In other words,
but you wouldn't expect you wouldn't expect that to be laid out as clearly.
See, so we welcome the fact that that law is laid out clearly in legislation. The problem here is, and this is what people, the government are missing, is that the Constitution is the fundamental law. It's the location for your rights and the citizens' rights and the obligations of the state. So if the principles of the Constitution are conflict with the law, the law falls. Okay. The law doesn't work. So the government can create as many laws as it likes in terms of defining a durable relationship, but if a judge decides, actually, no, you're wrong, that's not what a durable relationship means. So, for example, single parent families, the only time durable relationship appears in jurisprudence in this country at the moment is in terms of a sexual or an intimate relationship, and actually that would leave out single parents. And again, the government are so fuzzy about this, they can't answer those questions. Mm. And when we ask them to answer those questions, they go, it'll be decided by the court. Yeah, but that's reverse democracy. Because what that means is, in a democracy, the people decide the law, and then the judges implement it in the specific cases. But what we're being told is, well, you don't really need to know what the law means, the judge will work it
out. Deputy Cowan, do you think in hindsight, maybe the wording could have been a little bit clearer to allay some of these concerns, but also to have a more inclusive constitution?
No, I don't, to be honest. You'll never please everybody, no matter what wording one puts in place. As I said to you earlier, the Constitution, you know, sets out our values and who we are. And the mention of the family today being based on marriage and marriage alone does not reflect society, does not reflect the reality. It's antiquated, it's sexist, it has to be changed. It's a fundamental right. The details associated with wills and succession and property rights are determined by the courts. Power is divided in this country between the legislature and the judiciary. So, and that's as it should be. That's as we has served us well. It's a living document. It's open to change. It's open to amendment. You look at Family Carers, FLAC, Care Alliance, Law Society of Ireland, all those representative bodies have looked at this objectively, know the intent that is involved, know that you can never find a form of words that will satisfy 100% of the people all of the time. It's just not possible, because somebody will find fault with it in some shape or form and create doubt and whatnot. But the bottom line here is our Constitution should reflect society as it is today. That section of the Constitution that talks about a family being based solely on marriage is antiquated, it's sexist, it's wrong, it doesn't reflect the realities of today, and so, I'm happy to ask Barry, people to vote accordingly and change that section.
So Barry, in terms of a person who's in a marriage that's not dissolved with one person and also is in a durable relationship with another person...
You mean having an affair?
At the same time. No, you could be...
Well,
it could be an affair, but like we don't know if they're durable relationships either.
I'd say, Patter, you send them on to the courts to get a ruling on that.
Yeah, but see, and this is the major problem, Barry. See, most of your listeners, Barry, don't... Most of your listeners don't...
One at a time, please, if you don't mind.
Barry, most of your listeners don't have 10,000, 50,000, 100,000 each time to go to the courts. This is a recipe for confusion.
But you get test cases, do you not? Flack took the Amira case recently.
The Amira case is is a pure example of this. So what happened in the Amira case was there was legislation set down by the Oireachtas. It was actually agreed on by the Attorney General. Mr. O'Mara brought this very tragic case himself to the courts. And they said that the government wasn't implementing the law
properly. I think
properly.
Barry Cowan is an important question here for you.
What way is Mr. O'Mara voting?
Yeah, I understand he's entitled to vote.
He's
entitled to vote.
He's
yes.
Yes.
He is entitled. He's entitled to vote. Yes, but that does not get
and
rid.
He is voting,
that does not get rid of the point, Barry, that you have a situation where
I think it does. I think
your answer to this is you can go to the courts. All we're saying to people
Mr. O'Mara went to the courts,
and
Mr. O'Mara got a ruling that was fair and appropriate,
which struck
to the
down your law,
which is
Barry,
the, which is
struck
the job the, and the
which
duty
struck
of
down your
the
law.
The one thing, another thing that jumped out at me from your commentary there. Patter, is that you said that you recognise that the constitution needs changing, but you don't like this wording. Are you saying that if you were as part of a government, you would be in favour of, even if the public vote no, going back to the people again with a different wording of this referendum?
See, I actually think this is an example of
yes
the,
or no. No, if you well, don't I, mind I, on that one.
To be honest, I,
no
would,
yes
I,
no.
I wouldn't be going back to the people if they vote no on
really?
This straight,
well,
straight away.
But surely then, as a legislator, you'd be reneging there. That's like a populist thing to say.
No,
isn't it?
No.
You say that the legislation needs to be adjusted, but because it was wrongly worded in your view by this government and the public vote no, you know that if you said now that you would go back to the public again, you would feel the same wrath that Sinn Féin have felt when they said they would go back to the public
well,
again.
I was in Sinn Féin back in a time where they said no to the second Lisbon referendum, which actually was brought about by the Fianna Fáil government. And and at that stage, I said that once the people have their view, you have to respect their view on that. And I'm a Democrat, and I respect it. Even if I disagree with issues, I would respect it. But the key point is, and all of these questions about what would happen to a farm, for example, in terms of a person who is in a marriage and in a durable relationship with two separate people, nobody knows what
but
happens
what
there.
Farming
nobody
wants to decide what happens there.
At the moment, one of the most contentious issues is sorting out what happens with a farm already, yeah. As it stands.
It is. Yeah. And this is throwing confusion into it. And the mental thing is, you know, in a democracy, Brian, or Barry, the situation is that people decide the law. Okay. What you're saying is here is just throw open the question, leave the courts
no,
to decide
actually,
all
the law. I want Barry to come back at you. Go ahead.
Decide the law. You're elected to decide the law, as is provided for within the Constitution.
But I can't,
don't you know that?
Yes, but Barry, I can't decide the law if it's not in agreement with the principles of the Constitution. If the Constitution decides
no,
that for
you
your
don't
law,
believe it's in the principles of
no,
the Constitution, but the people will decide
any
next
law.
Friday. And okay. I hope they decide in the affirmative.
Okay, right, the Kerr Amendment. Do you want to go ahead on this one, Barry? Sorry, I knew that was going to get a little contentious and I wanted a little bit of separation so that it can be as clear as possible for the listener. The Kerr Amendment, also you're advocating for a yes.
Yeah, again, presently our Constitution talks about the life of women and the duties of mothers, specifically in the home. That has to be and needs to be taken out. Instead, it should talk about care by family members to each other and for the state to help and assist. Also, but there's no, you know, again, it's sexist, it's antiquated, it doesn't reflect the society we live in today. And, you know, 1937, it might have done that. We've three generations since, we've moved on, thankfully, and women have a role as equal to men in every aspect of life. And where it's not, organizations are seeking to rectify that. And you've seen the GAA last week, for example, you know, begin the process of amalgamating the Camogie Association, ladies' football, and the GAA into one organisation, as it should be, representing men and women equally and allowing them to flourish equally. And presently, the Constitution 41, Section 2, you know, talks about women's duties being in the home. That has to be changed. And they're not the only caregiver in the home. Again, that is a duty that falls to other members of the family and to the state, where and when it can help and assist also.
And what about,
you know,
just
the bottom
in relation
line here,
to
you
the,
asked me to simplify this.
Yes.
We're simplifying the language. We're recognising the realities of the social life in Ireland today. And I, again, would ask people to vote yes on this section also.
Now, in relation to the language, strive to support the provision of such care within families. Strive, do you believe that's strong enough language? And also, too, is it too specific a language that it doesn't take account of care outside the home? You know, people with disabilities, that it's not really, it's not strong enough when we have an opportunity to vote on it. It's not inclusive and strong enough.
People can well argue that it's not strong enough. I acknowledge that. But it's a commitment that the government is making Any government of the day, of course, will strive to help and assist in many walks of life in relation to the public service it provides. But there, you know, there's we can't necessarily, you know, it's not a perfect system of government in any day of the week whereby everything and everybody is catered for in equal measure. And you're getting into a situation then where you're creating priorities that would be conflicting. I think strive is the best, it's the best compromise we can reach insofar as, of course, you know, we would expect and appreciate and acknowledge the care that is given in any home by different members of a family. And the state will step in and strive to help and support and augment that care where it can, when it can, and according to the finances that are available to ensure that it can.
Okay, Pádraig Tobin.
Yeah, I can sense the frustration in Barry's voice there. A lot of the government's TDs are you know, realising that people are increasingly coming out against these amendments at the moment, and that people are frustrated with regards how the government have created these. You know, I believe that this amendment was actually, in part written by the Department of Finance, because, you know, these amendments were written with the sole purpose of insulating the government from any responsibility to provide care to individuals. Barry mentioned FLAC there in an earlier statement. FLAC is obviously coming out against this particular amendment and has stated that the government's amendment is sexist, because what the government is doing is codifying within the constitution that care is only in the family. And as a result, in most cases, the reality is that women provide that care, and it actually literally cements that situation in existence. And what we've been saying very clearly is that we need a situation where the state has an obligation. And remember, obligation was the words that the Citizens' Assembly used for this particular amendment. And of course, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, in their neoliberal instincts, decided to protect the state from any responsibilities in relation to that and to locate care within the families. So we know the families are already under phenomenal pressure. At the public meeting that I was at in Letterkenny last night, you know, a mother came along who has a number of children with disabilities. She's getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning. She's getting to bed at 2. She's 2 a.m. She's finding it really, really difficult to get just a handful of home care hours and the necessary respite and the operations she needs for her children. And the state is saying, you know, well done. We'll give you a Hallmark card, you know, a window dressing in relation to this particular amendment. But, you know, when you actually comes to getting help, stuff it. You do yourself.
That's a very strong claim from Deputy Tobin there. Is that how you see it, Barry Cowan?
It's not, and it's not how Family Carers Ireland see it, or the Care Alliance Ireland see it. They see this as an amendment that should be supported and recognised and appreciated. And I agree wholeheartedly. And I meet no more than Pat or any other representative, meet with carers on a regular basis in my constituency, at my clinics, helping and assisting and improving and seeking to improve and striving to improve the facilities, the service and the assistance is given to them by the state. And we've seen much improvements over time, and we'll see more. And it's a duty and obligation, you're right, of course, for a government to strive to improve the provision of public services in this area and many other areas. But as you'll know, when you get into government, if you ever do participate in government, that you have to be in a situation whereby you have money coming in and money going out, and there's an obligation and a duty to ensure that public finances are kept in a way in which allows the country to thrive, allows the country to divide the provision of services to help and assist all walks of life.
All right.
And, you know, and this section is no different. And it's just a means, again, to acknowledge in our constitution what we strive to do.
We're living at a time where there's enormous government services
at the moment.
The reference
to a woman in the home being the main provider of care is not the fact on the ground.
Okay,
and it is in many cases.
We're living at a time where there's...
Just one moment, Barry, if you don't mind, please. Just very briefly.
We're living at a time where there's enormous government surpluses. And yet we have people who are basically having to lie to doctors to say they can't take their parents home from hospital because until they get home care hours. And we have, you know, nursing homes closing on a monthly basis.
But a lot of that is not about financing. That's about getting the staff.
Well, it's about paying the staff. And this is a key point. If you pay the staff, you'll get the staff. And the government, again, to show how little the government thinks of carers at the moment, carers get very little more than actually the average or the minimum wage. Mm. So the government is forcing people to work on low wages and then say, but we can't employ them at the moment.
I mean, Barry Cowan, would you not argue that this sets out in the constitution that the government strives to improve the conditions for carers?
I think that question is for Pádraig.
Okay. Listen, do you know what? Unfortunately, we might just have to leave that there, if you don't mind. I think would we all agree that as much as is possible that people brief themselves as much as they can and actually get out and vote? I suspect we could be in the up around here anyway in the mid-30s if we're lucky. Deputy Barry Cowan, I mean, regardless of which way people vote, you know, a vote was hard-earned. It's important as much as possible people get out and exercise that vote. Would you agree?
Absolutely, and I would encourage people to get out and vote. I would encourage people to look up the Electoral Commission's website, where they will explain the pros and cons associated with what's being proposed and allow people to make up their own mind in the sanctity of their own home without listening to arguments from me and Pather. Suffice to say, when asked a question, we'll answer it and so, as best we can. As I say to you, I'm trying to simplify matters and just allow our constitution reflect the realities of society today.
I agree this referendum is in the balance. This is an important referendum. I think the government are depending on people not knowing what it's about, but there's a clear momentum with the no vote at the moment, and I would make sure that people shouldn't stay at home.
No voters are less likely probably to go out to not vote.
And that's the key. I think it's important that people do come out and vote.
Okay, listen, it's very interesting. Both of you, thank you very much indeed. We do appreciate it. Hopefully in some way that has helped the situation. Barry Cowan, thank you very much. Pádraig Tobin, thank you. Just a quick word. No great grounds being made in the polls. Are you disappointed with that?
No, we're happy that we're
static.
We're tipping around at 3% at the moment, and these are polls that basically put us at zero before the last general election when we got 2%. So we'll be very, very happy. We've got good candidates in Donegal, obviously, and Mary T. Sweeney and Michael Harkin, and we hope to add to that as well. So we have a growing organisation here too. I actually think that AIM2's policies best reflect where Donegal is at, and I would encourage people to get involved. This is a republic that we are all responsible for, so people should get active.